Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover. Step back.
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, this is episode number 194 of the Crossover Podcast. David Johnston and Jeff Dantzler along with you. I'm from the Morning Show. Jeff from the home team. Thanks so much for joining us here this Tuesday afternoon. We went late in the week last week. We're early in the week this week. So thank you very much for picking us up here. Of course, with your iPhone in the App Store and your Android and Google Play. And as we speak, 11 days, Jeff, until the Dogs in Clemson get things going. When we record the podcast next week, we'll be in single digits, which I can get behind.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's game week, and Josh Connor and I were talking about this on the Monday afternoon show, and I think this is why August, one of the many reasons, especially since the PGA moved, it's the worst sports month. I mean, to me, getting anxious and excited for college football season, it's more fun in June and July, because when August comes around, practice starts, you feel like it's there, but then you don't want to have any news. And as George has been bitten by the injury bug, you feel like if you do hear anything coming out, no matter who your team is, it's not going to be good. It's rare to hear like, oh man, yeah, we got the next Joe Montana quarterback, you know, we got the next Lawrence Taylor,
JT Daniels going to win the Heisman.
Oh, no doubt about it. So it's, yeah, so you kind of get to that point. Now, I think everybody's hungry, and you know the players across the country. When practice first starts up, all right, they're ready to get going, but you know after a week, 10, 12 days, they're getting salty when you've had that second scrimmage. And these guys are probably all like racehorses in the gate. They're about ready to break through. So a talking season is almost over. And in fact, this week we've got some week zero games to kick things off. And I enjoyed, I got to catch a lot of the opening high school games for the Corky Kell Classic last weekend, and that was terrific to see. There were a lot of great games. So to see these games where they're keeping score and it actually counts, heck, I've even watched some preseason NFL games.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any starters play yet in any of these games.
No, I did see in the Jags game on Monday night, I guess here's Urban Meyer trying to reinvent the wheel. And I get he's going to run his offense how he wants to run his offense, but Trevor Lawrence is doing a designed run in a preseason game. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see, what would that be? AFI? Is that called asking for it?
Yeah. I mean, I like what the Rams do. Sean McVay just says, we're not going to play our starters.
And that's kind of what's going on, at least with the skill players with the Falcons.
Yeah, I think it just – the risk of the injury. Now, you do see when the season starts a lot of times, and I know coaches and the analysts will talk about it, that tackling the first couple of weeks is really bad.
Yeah.
So take some overs early, because you don't want to get guys banged up in the preseason. But it's still, when you talk about the length, and especially now, DJ, a 17-game season, the length of it, if you're going to the playoffs and you got a pretty darn near 50% chance, as 14 out of 32 do, it's just not worth the injury risk.
Isn't it weird to be predicting records for teams and saying things like 11-6 or 7-10? It doesn't make sense.
It just don't seem right. Now, I was thinking about this, DJ. This has got to be, for pro sports, it's the only sport that has an odd number of games. Now, college football forever had 11 regular season games.
That's right.
Which I like that. You either had a losing record or a winning record.
One or the other.
One or the other.
Although then you could have ties.
There's darn ties in there. We went 5-5-1.
But I guess, let's see, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Pac-12, though, have an odd number of conference games.
That's
so that unusual. You can look at it that way. And will we be seeing the SEC and ACC eventually go to 9 conference games?
Trying to predict what college football is going to look like in the next few years.
Well, funny you mention.
Who knows?
Funny you mention the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 announcing an alliance today that they will work together on a collaborative approach surrounding the future evolution of college athletics and scheduling with a clear eye on the growing power of the SEC. Now, that last part was the AP story. It wasn't the quote. But the evolution of college athletics and scheduling, the future evolution. Now, when they say college athletics, I guess they mean everything. Or are they talking about football? These conferences getting together. And by the way, where's the Big 12? They're getting ghosted.
I feel horrible for schools like Kansas State and Texas Tech.
Oklahoma
right now.
State.
They're just.
Yeah, TCU.
They've just been completely left out.
Yes. So this alliance thing, and you mentioned something before we started the podcast. Conferences getting together and trying to improve scheduling is not anything new.
No. They just will probably want to try and get something down on paper. And I went, who'd you say it was Pac-12, Big Ten, and ACC?
Yes.
They just might want to get something down where, you know, hey, you're every school in each of those leagues is going to play, say, one year the ACC, you're going to play a Big 12 team, and the next year you're going to play a Pac-12 team. Or maybe, you know, maybe they try and do one from each conference.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's – that would be something that would then give you, if you're talking about 8 or 9 conference games plus 2 major non-conference foes, I think that'd be a great thing.
I do too.
And again, the root of a lot of this, and it kind of gets back to what we talk about, where you better take care of things yourself or Big Brother's going to come in and change things. But when college football went to a 12-game regular season schedule in 2002 and 2003, and that was an experimental basis, and then it went permanent in 2006. The thinking was, and I remember, DJ, watching those games. We had just started the shows.
Right.
Hey, we got Georgia-Clemson back. We got Miami and Florida back. That's awesome. Alabama played Oklahoma. Virginia played South Carolina. You got some great games, SEC, ACC, and some old rivalries that were renewed that were lost because of conference expansion and championship games, and that was the point of it. Well, then it didn't take long. You had a lot of schools, and some of the guilty ones, not every year, but some of the guilty ones have been Ole Miss, Kentucky, Arkansas, when they're just doing 3 or 4 basically just you know, lower division teams. That's not why this 12th game was put in. It was put in to create, like, hey, listen, we can get Miami and Florida again. We can get Georgia and Clemson again. Or we could have, again, I'm going back to 02 and 03, aging myself, have Alabama play Oklahoma. Not just throw on 3 or 4 games that are basically just BUI bye games.
What were, like, some of the, like, old-timey rivalries that, like, when we were kids or even before? It's like Alabama and Penn State.
Alabama, I'm thinking about West Virginia and Maryland used to play.
Yeah.
Just games like
that. Games like that you thought, okay, this can get these games back on the schedule.
That's what it was supposed to do.
Yeah. And I guess Alabama and Penn State have played, right?
They did.
But
did
it wasn't like a...
Right, a frequent.
An annual thing or a frequent. Yeah, not even annual, but a frequent thing. That didn't even happen.
And the way the
Georgia and Clemson, that
absolutely.
Was another one.
Absolutely. And the way, one of the funny things, too, about the way the leagues are set up is when I sit there and think about this and old rivalries, and going back to independent days as well, is that Pitt, Penn State, and West Virginia are all 3 in different conferences.
That is pretty wild.
And I think about, you know, and obviously the history we've got with Pitt and Penn State and golly, West Virginia too, going back to 05. But, you know, I think about Marino and Blackledge and Hostetler just watching those games. And those teams should all be playing each other.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's where with the geography of things, it's at some point you would think it would loop back around, maybe not for football, but certainly for the other sports. And – you know, I can remember when the ACC made the big jump and got those old Northeastern Big East teams in there. You and I had back-to-back weeks where I believe we went at Clemson and at Tech. One of them was going to Pitt. One of them was going to BC. And it was the first time since 1973 they weren't playing each other. And we were just saying, this is absurd.
Going on?
They're going to go get snowed out up there, and they're not playing each other for the first time in 40 years. This is ludicrous.
Yeah, it is. It's bizarre. And they, I guess, you know, their league, the way they do it, they kind of do it the same way the SEC does, because it's like really the SEC schedules differently in football than it does in men's basketball, than it does in baseball. And I guess do the women schedule women's basketball? How do they schedule in the SEC?
It's similar to the men, DJ.
Okay. They don't have divisions.
No, but you've got
like some permanent opponents.
Correct. Yeah. So basically the men play 18, the women play 16. And on the women's side, every school has a natural rival. In Georgia's case, it's Florida. So Georgia and Florida play every year. And then you play a traditional East team and a traditional West team.
Okay.
So there are three teams you play twice. And for the men, I don't know if there's that designated specific rival, because remember a few years ago the schedule came out and you say, well, we're not playing Florida, Kentucky, or Tennessee at home.
At home.
That's not good.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you know, you and I talk about the SEC for a living, and we're still trying to figure out some of the stuff, like in the scheduling.
Well, I had had the idea, and with 14 teams in the league, that what they ought to do for football is to do away with the divisions. And I actually had it made up for every team, and then have it where you would play five teams every year. And say in Georgia's case, it would be Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina, Auburn, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And then of the other eight, you would play 4 1 year and then 4 the next. 4 in year 3 and then the 4 in year 4, that the odd number of years and the even number of years being the same, and you flip-flop the home and road. So that way over a 2-year period, you've played everybody in the league.
Yep.
And over a 4-year period, you've been
to
everywhere in the league.
Yeah. Well, that just makes too much sense.
I thought it was a pretty good idea. And it's
But it seems like the most nonsensical things are the ones that seem to prevail.
Well, and now we're about to get into it. And, DJ, we've seen it firsthand, especially Dave and I have been calling Georgia baseball games since Abner Doubleday. And when we've seen the different variations and forms of the schedule and the SEC tournament, you name it, and now the devil is in the details when it's going to come to how the divisions are done. Well, are they just going to go a straight east and west? Are they going to go to four-team pods? And then trying to get everybody to agree, and the commissioner saying, well, everybody's just got to be flexible on this. Well, that's easier said than done.
Exactly.
And
it's easier. Yeah, it's easy for him to say.
Right.
Yeah.
And the schools, I get, they're going to make a lot more money. Well, where's the relevancy there? They've been making more money. Now it's just going to be more of it. And if there's something that you feel puts your school at a competitive disadvantage in whatever the sport may be, it might be football. Hey, your daughter might play softball or soccer, and that might be the most important thing to you. And all of a sudden, you're looking at a travel situation or a competition level.
Like Missouri, they're going to get more money, but are they going to put it in things that need to be upgraded, like the baseball stadium?
Exactly. And I brought this up and with Alan Thomas, who does a great job. He is the director of Georgia's external affairs, so he does all the TV contracts and the concessions and all that. And he agrees with us when we had said when the leagues expanded, I said, well, you know, in my opinion, the conferences should send each school $1 million earmarked for travel.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I remember the first year when Missouri and A&M came in the league, our women's tennis team had to go Athens, Atlanta, St. Louis, Columbia, St. Louis, Houston, College Station, Houston, Atlanta, Athens. And that should be earmarked. And it was funny, Alan said, I completely agree with you. So what the league is saying, like, well, that extra money gives you the opportunity for that. Knowing good and well, most schools, they're just going to put that money away. And that's, again,
I think schools see it as like, hey, we can get 3 Will Muschamps and still have 100,000 left over.
Missouri, our baseball press box. Yes, I'm about to use this word. I know it's unpleasant. It sucks. But we're not going to do anything to fix it up.
Exactly.
Why would we?
Yeah, we don't care. And then, they clearly don't.
No, and then there's some areas, too, where the league should have a standard as well. I remember when Vandy finally got lights for baseball. You're thinking, oh, okay.
It's cool. It's the Wrigley Field of – no, it's not.
Not if there's rain.
Yeah, exactly.
Not before the clock switches.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, we had a little rain delay, and, whoo, we've had three pitching changes already. We're going to get this thing in before it gets dark.
Yeah, yeah. Did the Cubs used to deal with that? I guess they did, but it's still first of all, like you said, no press box or not a booth, I guess, at least for broadcasting and no lights. It's like you can only go so long before you got to think that things have got to change as far as that goes. Up,
but that's certainly something we see for Missouri, and you know, it's just for every school, and most of the schools in the SEC have top flight facilities at every level, but you do sometimes get some clunkers. And I can tell you too, for instance, Kentucky's women, they still play at Old Memorial, which when we first started going there, I thought it was kind of neat because that's where most of those great teams for Adolph Rupp played. And then after about 10, 12, 15 years of that, when they've done nothing to fix it up, this place is now, it's just a dump.
Because, are they still playing there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But historical buildings, you can keep it historical and keep them clean or make them nice. And that's what we said. I get it. Missouri's not going to build a 10,000-seat stadium with a retractable roof.
Right.
But you could still have a functioning press box and chair-back seats for your fans.
And you know, we've been lucky because Kentucky was a dump.
Oh.
And now they've got this state-of-the-art, beautiful, modern facility that's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And hopefully maybe something happens like that here. I know that opens up a whole new can of worms there when you start talking about Foley Field. But Missouri is definitely a good example of stuff like – and again, I know maybe you're listening to us and you're like, oh, I don't care about that. I get it. You don't. But if Georgia were in that boat, you'd be embarrassed.
You would be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not just us complaining about it or critiquing it. It is something that, like, if it were your school and you knew what was going on with that, you wouldn't like it at all. And another thing, too, is the overall facilities will enhance or you know, basically hurt you in recruiting, too.
Well, that's the face of your program.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that, too, when somebody comes in, and even before they did all the stuff with the West End Zone and the locker rooms, which is amazing, but just big picture, somebody comes in, and listen, it's like this for almost every school in the league, but somebody comes and is walking up on the bridge to Sanford Stadium, whether it's a recruit, a fan, somebody from another country, whatever it may be, you say, wow, football's important here.
Yeah.
Because you see that stadium. And you think it is a big deal. It's the same in Alabama and Auburn and Tennessee and Florida and so on. But your facilities are definitely the face of your program. It shows if it's important to you.
One of my niece's husband, they came to the Notre Dame game a couple of years ago.
Nice.
And, you know, he had never been to a Georgia game and just had the – you know, we had great weather that day.
Oh,
it was a perfect day.
Yeah.
But, you know, it kind of made you proud just to hear someone saying how great it was and they can't wait to get back and that kind of thing, too. Well, it's the same thing in recruiting.
No, it is, 100%. And, you know, for our fans, you know, talking about the facilities being the face of the program, of course, so is your fan base. You can have the nicest facilities in the world. If it's not crawling with fans, well, that doesn't do you much good. And fortunately, we've got that as well. You know, talking about that Notre Dame game, that reminds me of a story – Josh Lee, who is Kirby's, I guess, chief of staff, for lack of a better term. That's a very stress-free job.
Nothing going on there.
His counterpart at Notre Dame's their old quarterback, Ron Powlis.
Yeah.
And Josh told me it was about an hour, 15 minutes before kickoff of the 2019 game here. And that was another neat thing. The crowd was pretty darn packed in at that point. It was an earlier, and John, he said, they were looking, going, man, this is awesome. Go, we got to do this again. He said, Palace said, ain't no way, man, y'all came up and took over our stadium 2 years ago. So this is great. But if we see you guys again, it's going to be in a major bowl game. And that was one of the things I took some pride in that. And I know, and I'm sure Josh told Kirby that, that, yeah, our fans are showing out. We had right at half of the crowd at Notre Dame, if not a little bit more. And there was a little bit of worry in me that, well, they're going to be more Notre Dame fans. It was light. I mean, it was almost like
that was a big
Vandy
deal
crowd.
For Georgia fans to not sell their tickets. Notre Dame fans.
Yes. I mean, it was almost like a crowd you get with when Vanderbilt comes in.
It was very impressive on the Georgia fans' parts as far as that went. And, again, taking over that stadium. And, you know, for a long time, Georgia fans kind of had a bad reputation about not going to bowl games.
Right.
Oh, they play the Georgia-Florida game every year, and they spend their money on that. But it wasn't about going to bowl games and traveling. It was going to the same bowl games and the same tier bowl games.
And playing the same teams.
And then all of a sudden, 2017 rolled around. But it wasn't just 2017. I mean, when the bowl game's better, when the experience is better, Georgia's fans, whether there's a Georgia-Florida game or not, travel as well as anybody in the country.
You need to have a variety of who and where. And I've thought about this, too. Let's say the Dogs win the national championship this year. And then let's say Georgia next year has a great year, wins the East, beats Tech. You know, let's say just loses in Atlanta. But say we're sitting there at 11-2, coming off a national title. Like, yeah, all right, we're not in the playoffs. Still been a great year, still riding high. If we have a year like that and go to the Cotton Bowl, we'd take 35,000 people to Dallas. Because, we hadn't been since 1-2-84.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to your point, it was all right, we're Orlando, Tampa, or Atlanta against Virginia, Purdue, or Wisconsin.
That's right.
And nothing against those teams or those sites. But and I understand why the bowls and the leagues – back when the conferences expanded back that first round in 1992, I understand why they started getting all those tie-ins, especially those Florida bowls, getting the SEC and the Big Ten. You get that because those are the schools that travel, have the big fans. But then you get wrapped into just you're seeing the same teams, and if Georgia's in that boat, so was Auburn, you know, so were all the other teams in the league. And I can just think back, again, not that when I was growing up was the best, in my opinion it was, but I think we all romanticize about our days of youth. But I just always thought it would be cool, like if we're having a good season, hey, we just beat Florida. All right, if we beat Auburn and Tech, you know, we can go to the Sugar Bowl. But if we lose to Auburn and beat Tech, you know, maybe we could play Washington in the Sun Bowl, or like when we played Arkansas in the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah.
You'd see these teams that you just didn't see a lot and go to these places where – you hadn't played a lot.
So it's interesting. So I'm about to put you on the spot with a couple of historical questions that there may not be an answer to. But this isn't a question. This is a point. The only school that Georgia's played in its history that starts with an I is Idaho State.
How about that? So we've never played Iowa, Illinois, or Indiana.
Or Iowa State. Yeah, none of those teams, which is crazy.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And, I mean, you would think, and that goes to what you're saying about the bowl game.
Well, you've got
seeing the same teams.
Well, what with Illinois and Iowa, am I leaving somebody? That's two teams in the Big Ten that you would think at some point.
You bumped into or something.
Your paths would have crossed.
Yeah. Did notice, too, like We were talking about some of the Pac-12
teams.
Indiana,
so that's three.
In Indiana, exactly. But Idaho State's the only team that Georgia's ever played that starts with an I. But Oregon, so Georgia's only played Oregon once.
1977.
And that was the first game of their young head coach. Well, I don't know how young he was, but that was Rich Brooks' first game as their head coach. So that was kind of interesting, too. And, in fact, Grant Taff at Baylor, his first game was against Georgia.
How about Bruce Arians was Temple's coach in 83?
Isn't that wild?
It wasn't his first game,
right,
but I think
but
that
was
his first year.
His first year he was the coach. So he must have been, like, eight.
I know.
It seems like. But what I was going to ask you was, we kind of stumbled on this on the morning show, that Georgia and Miami haven't played since 1960.
Talking about the Hurricanes?
The Hurricanes,
they beat us in 66.
Okay, well, then that was the last time since 66. They played we've played them 12 times. I think it's 7-4-1 every game in Miami, and they weren't bowl games.
Yeah, we
from like 37-66.
I think a couple of years we might have even gone down there after.
It was
the
after
tech
the Tech
game.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was
kind of a trip slash bowl game.
Right.
Yeah, trip down to South Florida, which I kind of get, but then most of them though are like the third game of the season or in the middle of the season, and you're talking back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, where it wasn't quite as easy to travel as it is now.
Up on the train, probably.
But that's another one that's kind of strange.
It's interesting to, and you would just think our paths
exactly
would have crossed.
Exactly.
And I've had people ask me before, like, let me say this too. I think in baseball, men's and women's basketball, it's obviously in baseball we play Clemson and Tech every year, in hoops as well. But we need to play Clemson in men's and women's hoops. We need to play Florida State, Wake Forest, North Carolina, play those schools. But in football, I've had people ask you, oh, play Florida State again. No. We've got a mutual enemy. And we joke around. I say, those old guys knew what they were doing. And Coach Dooley and Coach Bowden realized that we don't need to be knocking each other out, too.
Right.
If we both want to beat those guys down in Gainesville – so, you know, so sometimes you would see, you kind of steer, Mike, if you figured you weren't going to get a recruit, you might steer them their way, and they might steer them just to get them away from Florida. But there's no doubt in the other sports, and, you know, sometimes with scheduling and you know, you understand who does some of the scheduling, and you just think around college athletics, there needs to be a better effort put in. And you know, you and I have talked about, like, say, sometimes for hoops, you'll see a team come in and you think, well, couldn't we play, like, Wake Forest
or
Florida State? I mean, somebody that our fans would be interested in. I mean, listen, it goes for everybody. It's not just us. But putting together an attractive schedule, I think, is very important, especially in this day and age when literally everything's on TV. And by the way, that's another factor when you're talking about actual attendance and people coming that I think led Georgia to that incredible aggressive schedule. And we'll see how this plays out. But with Oklahoma, Texas, Florida State, Ohio State, UCLA, Oregon, with all those teams coming on the schedule.
Yeah. No, and I think that a lot of that's going to get blown up. We're going to see a starting over thing. And, you know, going to 9 games would be a good first step.
I agree.
It would be a good first step. And then trying to figure out how you're going to do the conference. Is it going to be pods? Is it going to be whatever, the 2-18? I don't think it'll be 2-18 divisions. But what do I know?
I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, that's the thing.
As we've said, when these things
Greg
happen.
Sankey, does he know?
It's just, all right, we got all the dough. All right, now you guys figure out how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
Because one of the things we've said, too, with the where 14 has been tough, since you have an odd number of teams in each division, you can't have a weekend, say, in football and baseball where it's all
intra-division
games.
Yeah, exactly. I know, it's crazy.
I mean,
it's crazy.
The funny thing, too, though, Dave does the scoreboard for our baseball broadcast, and, you know, you're running through them one day, and it's early in the year, and there'd been some rain, and there are all these doubleheaders. And Dave says to me during the break, good Lord, there are 22 games today. So, like, I remember, when they're used to, there were 12.
There were 12.
Or then if you got in the league, there were six.
Six games.
Yes.
And we're in February.
Yeah, and they're like 22
in March
games.
With 22 games.
Yeah, half the teams
I think
are
we're
playing.
Most like, we're not going through all these.
No.
Yeah.
Missouri and Siena playing down a boardwalk on baseball. Yeah.
No.
We ain't got time for that.
You need to know that one and find out yourself.
We'll tell you the Florida State and the Clemson, South Carolina score. But
And that is the good thing. There's at least two or three of those kind of series going on, too.
For sure.
And I'm glad that we're going to get going back to doing the Tech thing again on the weekend. So that helps.
I agree.
That helps a lot. Although it was still interesting, I still think – that it put a little hair on your chest to say, hey, we're and certainly all coaches have their own philosophy, that's fine, but you're already playing Tech on the weekend, but you're talking about wanting to put a little hair on your chest, go play at Florida State the next weekend.
No doubt.
It's not gonna hurt you in the
No.
In the RPI. It's not going to hurt you in the SEC standings because they're not in the SEC.
No, and where that in the different philosophies and where that shows is if you've got a good team, you're battle tested getting into SEC play.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you want to go on the thing like, well, the RPI is going to be good enough playing in the league, I understand that, but are you ready going into the league?
It.
Now, there's also some of those years if you don't have a great team, you can get exposed and maybe some of those teams beat you down and you can lose some confidence.
Right, right.
So there's not a perfect way to schedule
no.
it, but I've always been one for scheduling good people. And I think with Clemson and the football opener, two things. Coach Dooley always say, kind of the old school way of thing was, you see a team improve its most from week one to week two. Whether that's true or not, who knows?
Always heard that, yeah.
Yes. But Coach Dooley, and I'm like, well, what if your best player's out for a month? And
then he comes back, yeah. Then it's week one to week five.
Exactly. And Coach Dooley said, say, you know a lot more about your football team if you play somebody really good in that first game. And I agree
yeah.
with that 100%. And then one of the things that Kirby said, and I've chatted with him a couple times in the offseason, you did too at the Touchdown Club, is just the focus. When you got somebody like Clemson sitting there, and he mentioned, I believe it was the last 2 days of spring practice, that he told the guys, like, and you know, they're worn out at that. But, all right,
yeah.
guys, we're going all Clemson today. He said you could just feel the energy. And certainly when you get into the dog days of practice, knowing that it's not Idaho State or Lou Monroe
right.
sitting there, that
right.
it's Clemson, and, of course, the same's true on their side, that you're getting that spark. You're getting that focus.
And my philosophy of that has changed over the years, too, because I used to think, oh, play – an easy game, and then that second week, you're ramped up, you're ready to go, and now I'm just the opposite of that. Open it up with a Clemson. Open it up with a big-time mm-hmm. non-conference opponent.
And I think also, DJ, with you kind of changing your thinking some, another thing that just when the league went to 12 and a conference championship game, and you've got all that within those 12 games in 13 weeks. Every now and then you'll get the two open dates. But essentially that opening game, you're coming in off an open date. You might as well play one of your tougher teams in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, to be honest with you, what's the bigger game as far as, like, if your goal is to win the national championship, which is the bigger game, Clemson or UAB? Well, it's UAB, because if you lose that, you're not going to win the national championship.
The least important game on Georgia's schedule is Clemson. Georgia could lose that game and win 14
yeah.
in a row and be
exactly.
the national champion.
Exactly.
It is.
But if you
least,
lost to UAB and
you're
won,
done.
You know, you're not going to be good enough
no.
to win the SEC. Because someone could say, well, what if you beat UAB? I mean, what if you lost to UAB, but you won all your other games?
But
if you lose to UAB, you're probably not going to win all your other games.
Correct. That's correct.
Yes.
And I'm nervy about that game, too, because they play Wednesday. They got that
I
extra
know.
Time. They got a lot of guys back. You know, and by the way, and this is, and we'll leave on this.
Yeah.
For Georgia and Clemson, in the locker room after that game, for the loser, it's going to be, all right, hey, listen, it's a tough game. We got to regroup. We got to refocus. We take care of our business. We can see those guys again. For the winner, it's going to be, all right, great win. We got to get ready for next Saturday.
That's right.
Because, I mean, the hype from the fan base of whoever wins that, it's going to be incredible.
Huge.
And
who does – I don't even know who – let's see, Clemson's second game, who do they play? Because I'd say just as far as just a pure ATS,
uh-huh.
UAB might be in a good place on the schedule.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
and
I think Georgia will win, but it might be, you know,
exactly.
a 27-13 type game there.
Well, Clemson plays South Carolina State in week two.
That
so.
They'll win by 70.
If they want to, yeah.
Yeah.
They can name the score.
They
on
can
that
name
one.
The score.
But
on
UAB's
that one.
In a good place on the schedule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So whoever wins that game for Kirby or for Dabo, their number one job is going to be just to try and slow the hype train down.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Jeff, we've got no time left, and we haven't mentioned hashtag dogs on tour. So I guess I'm superstitious, but I can't let the podcast go week by week mm-hmm. without dropping at least one little Georgia note. So let's see. I think of the 10 golfers that were in the Was it the BMW this past weekend?
Right.
Is it six or seven that have advanced into the top 70? I'll give you that number here in a moment.
And that's a good percentage, Aaron. Also, Grayson Sigg, he was already assured of his card, but
did you
he
see
won for the
end
second
of his tournament?
Time.
Did you see
I
that last
not.
Hole by his opponent?
I did not. I did see Cameron Smith's last hole on Monday in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
That, when you go OB.
Yeah, that takes the heat off. Sig's opponent, and luckily the guy's an English guy. His last name is Ray, R-A-I. He's already secured his card.
Okay.
His PGA card. But he had a one-shot lead. 18 was a par four. Hits his best drive of the day, 100 yards from the pin. And it was like a – it wasn't quite a Colin Montgomery at the U.S. Open, but it was a double bogey.
Ooh.
When you're laying 100 yards out. He hit his second shot through the green. Then he kind of had not a great lie, but going back the other way, he kind of hit it a little bladier than he wanted. It rolled all the way through the green. And then his fourth shot ended up about 10 or 12 feet, and then he missed the putt. Meanwhile, Grayson hit his drive left. And then he did get his second shot up on the green, but it went through. But he got a pretty good ruling because he was up against the stands, and it put his lie from being in the grass to on the fringe.
Oh, nice.
And he got to putt, and he putted it within a couple of inches or whatever, and he ends up winning the tournament.
And I think when you hit the great drive and wind up making double, that's when you can just hear, whether it's your dad or somebody playing, most of the shots come right around the green.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. So playing this weekend, we got Keith Mitchell, Russell Henley, Kisner, Kirk, Harmon, Swafford, and English.
Seven.
Seven.
7-7.
Awesome.
That would be 1/10.
Just like it was almost last week.
This just did. We're great at math.
Yes. And a good omen, too, is they're playing at Caves Valley.
Oh, 2005.
Where the 2005 team won the Natty.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to have I'm going to have to put Kiz and Kirk in my group this week
for
a little tribute, if nothing else.
Guys, you plan on playing with your national championship rings on? I'll hang up and listen.
Enjoyed it, Jeff.
Me too, man.
We will catch you next week. You've been listening to the Crossover Podcast. Dave and Jeff along with you again. Thanks for checking us out in the App Store with your iPhone and with your Android in Google Play. He's Jeff Dantzler from the home team. I'm David Johnston from the morning show. The Crossover Podcast, 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to the Crossover on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.